Namaste, good evening. I would imagine by now you may have had the thought, maybe a few times, where you thought to yourself, I actually came here on my own volition? I always had that thought at some point early on in retreat, where I'll think, gosh, I could be a Club Med, why did I come to Club Meditation? It could be so challenging. Tonight, I'd like to talk about the basics, about the real core fundamentals of practice. We can think of meditation as a very nuanced practice, but in many ways, the instructions are very simple. I'm reminded of one of the senior Vipassana teachers who, back in the 70s, got very intrigued about the practice and went to Asia to learn. And back then, you know, it was a pretty loose scene. And as he tells the story, he went to this, you know, facility to learn how to meditate. And basically what he was told was, there's your hut. Keep your awareness in the body. We'll check in a week. Keep your awareness in the body. Maybe that's it. Here's what the Buddha said. I declare that it is within this fathom-long carcass, with its perceptions and thoughts, that there is the world, the origin of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path leading to the cessation of the world. When I hear that, a few questions arise. The first one is, what exactly is a fathom? I looked it up. It's 1.8228 meters. But here in this body, with its perceptions and thoughts, the origin of the world, the cessation of the world, the path leading to the cessation of the world, everything in the body. So the instructions are simple at the most fundamental. Draw the awareness into the body. But to steal a line from the great teacher Pat Coffey, as you mature on this path, you're developing yourself as a contemplative artist. I love that phrase, a contemplative artist. There are many ways of paying attention. There are many techniques and many nuanced ways of being present. And tonight we're going to look at kind of the core practices about mindfulness of the body. When it comes to our relationship with the body, I've noticed that we tend to fluctuate between kind of indulging into the senses and holding our body with some derision, some self-criticism. Is there anyone here who has looked at your body in the mirror at one point and ever had a critical thought? Exploring your relationship to your body, and perhaps even transforming your relationship to your body, can not only create a different relationship to it, but according to the Buddha, it can cultivate full awakening. That's the promise in that statement. But we have to reevaluate how we relate to our embodied experience. The Buddha said, if you think that you can gain enlightenment by indulging the senses, you may find that not to be correct. He also said, if you think that you can gain enlightenment by denying the senses, you may be incorrect. Learning how to truly and deeply listen to what arises from the body and how you hold your experience in any given moment seems to be the key. So how do we turn our attention to that arising consciousness in the body? There's a wonderful prayer that I have found helpful. It's rather long. I've edited it a little bit. But it speaks so beautifully about this presence, this wisdom that arises from our felt sense. And if you like, you might close your eyes and I'll I'll read this slowly so that you can contemplate it. And as you listen to the words, you might just sense that this voice is arising within your own felt sense. I am the pain in your head, the knot in your stomach, the unspoken grief in your smile. I am your elevated blood pressure, your fear of challenge, your lack of trust. I am your cold hands and feet, your agitation and your fatigue. I am where you hurt, the fear that persists, the sadness of your dreams unfulfilled. I am your symptoms, the causes of your concern, the signs of your imbalance, the condition of your dis-ease. You tend to disown me, suppress me, ignore me, inflate me, coddle me, condemn me. I am not coming forth for myself, as I am not separate from all that is you. I come to garner your attention, to enjoin your embrace, so that I can reveal my secrets. I have only your best interests at heart as I seek health and wholeness by simply announcing myself. You usually want me to go away, to disappear, to slink back into obscurity. You're mostly irritated or frightened and at many times shocked by my arrival. And from this stance, you medicate me in order to eradicate me. More times than not, I am only the most recent note in a long symphony, the most evident branches of roots that have been challenged for seasons. So I implore you, I am a messenger with good news, as disturbing as I can be at times. I am wanting to guide you back to those tender places in yourself, a place where you can hold yourself with compassion and honesty. If you look beyond my appearance, you may find that I am a voice from your soul, calling you from deep places that seek alignment. Wherever I lead you, my hope is that you will realize that success will be not measured by my eradication, but by the shift in the internal landscape from which I emerge. I am your friend, not your enemy. I have no desire to bring pain and suffering into your life. I am simply tugging your sleeve. I desire for you to allow me to speak to you in a way that enlivens your higher instincts for self-care. You are a being so vast, so complex, with amazing capabilities for self-regulation and healing. Let me lead you to the mysterious core of your being, where insight and wisdom are available when called upon with a sincere heart. If you like, you can let your eyes open. If you like, you can remain with them closed. So here is this presence that's saying, let me lead you to the mysterious core of your being, where insight and wisdom are available when called upon with a sincere heart. This morning, Tara talked about attend and befriend. This practice of naming what is here and bringing a quality of friendship. And this is the most fundamental inquiry of befriending your body and learning to listen to its messages. So tonight I'd like to share with you some questions or some inquiries that can help you to navigate your experience. An inquiry is a question that that opens your attention to what is here and to what is arising. Tara mentioned the acronym of RAIN this morning. Recognizing what's here, allowing, investigating with a sense of kindness, being intimate, and ultimately holding your experience with a sense of natural awareness, of not identifying with what's there. So I'd like to share with you four questions that have worked for me, and we each need to find these questions that help to open up our internal experience. So these are just some possibilities. And with each of these four questions, we'll explore and really kind of try it on through a little meditative inquiry as well. So the first question is, what is this moment right now? What is this? There's a story of a Dharma debate where this was at the core. And the teachers were 70-year-old Kalu Rinpoche of Tibet, a veteran of years of solitary retreat, and the Zen master, Sung San, the first Korean Zen master to teach in the United States. They were to test each other's understanding of the Buddhist teachings for the benefit of onlooking Western students. This was to be a high form of what was being called Dharma combat. The clashing of great minds sharpened by years of study and meditation. And we were awaiting with all the anticipation that such an historic encounter deserved. The two monks entered with swirling robes, maroon and yellow for the Tibetan, austere gray and black for the Korean, and were followed by retinues of younger monks and translators with shaven heads. They settled onto cushions in the familiar cross-legged positions, and the host made it clear that the younger Zen master was to begin. The Tibetan Lama sat very still, fingering a wooden rosary with one hand while murmuring, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. The Zen master, who was already gaining renown for his method of hurling his questions at students until they were forced to admit their ignorance, and then bellowing, keep that don't know mind at them, reached inside his robe and drew out an orange. What is this? He demanded of the Lama. What is this? This was a typical opening question, and we could feel him ready to pounce on whatever response he was given. The Tibetan sat quietly fingering his mala and made no move to respond. What is this? The Zen master insisted, holding the orange up to the Tibetan's nose. Kalu Rinpoche bent very slowly to the Tibetan monk near him, who was serving as the translator, and they whispered back and forth for several minutes. Finally, the translator addressed the room. Rinpoche says, what is the matter with him? Don't they have oranges where he comes from? The dialogue progressed no further. Nonetheless, this question, what is this, automatically directs your attention to the here and now. So let's try it on. If you like, you can close your eyes. As you feel the breath and as you direct your awareness to what is here, what is your moment right now? Can you name it? What exactly is happening right now? Is it changing? How is it changing? what is this moment right now? If you like, you can deepen the breath and let the eyes open. This question, in all its variations, what is this? What's happening? What's my experience right now? It brings you into contact with what is real and what is true. Of course, this goes deeper. Oftentimes we might recognize an emotion. We might say, this is anger. And we might ask, is that true? Is this anger? We might find, perhaps not. Perhaps it's disappointment. So the moment is constantly changing, and inevitably what we become aware of, first of all, is that our experience is constantly changing. But we can recognize that our experience is occurring on different levels, that there is this embodied experience. When we look at the foundations of awareness, this kind of undifferentiated energetic experience of here and now, it doesn't even have a name. It's just energy. It's animating your body. And we become aware of vedana, of kind of the feeling tone of how this experience of the moment is interpreted even almost before we're even aware of it into three fundamental categories. There is that which is arising which we find unpleasant. There is that which is arising that we find pleasant. And there is that which is arising which is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It has a quality of neutral. Everything arising from the body will fall into one of these three categories. And from here, what arises from that are all the different thought forms. Our opinion of what is arising, our aversion to what is arising, our desire to keep what is arising, the emotional element that arises out of that experience. The fourth foundation are the mindfulness of the mental phenomena, or the, almost referred to as the dhammas. It's more of a sense of what in all of this is true, and we'll talk more about that later. But on these different foundations of this immediate experience in the body, the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral qualities, the level of thought forms, our tendency is to hang out on the level of thought forms. Our thoughts about what's arising, our beliefs about what's arising. And when we hang out on that level trying to figure things out, it's kind of like trying to put out a fire with gasoline. It just adds to the mental proliferation. So the guidance in this practice is to escort your attention back to the experience, back to that primal arising of here and now in the body-mind. Of course, this is challenging because the mind is constantly commenting. It's constantly seeking pleasure, avoiding pain. And there is a training element here, that we are training ourselves to recognize what's happening, to recognize our relationship to it, and to make this fundamental shift from the cognitive back to the experience again and again and again and again. So there's a quality of training that is willful, where we bring ourselves back, we start over again and again. And over time, we begin to perhaps feel a shift, a little more calm, a little more present, a little more capacity to stay with that experience, that moment-to-moment experience. A poem by Art Vanderloo entitled A Short Course in Zen. The mystery of life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. In many ways, that is the essence of our practice. To come again and again to the reality of what we are experiencing in the here and now. And so part of the instructions in this embodied practice is to find an anchor, to find somewhere in the sense field where you can rest your attention. And there are many ways that we can do this. Again, many different skillful means. When I was a Peace Corps volunteer in West Africa, there was a sadhu, traveling sadhu from the Ananda Marga group, who showed up at my house. He was traveling the world with a little briefcase. That's all he had. And he stayed with me for about a week as he was traveling through. Someone sent him in my direction because they knew I meditated. And so we were talking about practice, and he said, "What do you use for an anchor?" And I said, "Well, I focus on the breath at the nostrils." And he said, "Very bad, very bad. You don't do that. Put the anchor in the belly. That is where you put the anchor." Any tradition you get trained in, you'll find another tradition that gives you the opposite instruction. And again, when we consider ourselves as contemplative artists, your use of the anchor is an intuitive process. When you are feeling particularly scattered, finding it very difficult to stay present to this arising experience, to narrow your attention can be very, very powerful. To narrow your attention to a specific aspect of the breath or to the aliveness of sound. If you find yourself getting very calm and very quiet, you may find it more skillful to relax your relationship with the anchor, to sense more of the field in which everything is arising and passing and changing. And I have no doubt that as you continue to practice, that you will find your way. The Buddha speaks of this middle way, not too tight, not too loose. And that sweet spot is a constantly moving target. So recognizing when a narrow attention to become more concentrated, to call your attention here, is skillful. Other times, again, it may be more helpful to soften, to relax, and to sense the space in which it's all arising. So as we pay more and more delicate, intimate attention to our internal experience, we begin to realize that energy is moving all the time. This life force that animates the body, the difference between your body and a corpse is this energetic experience that is moving and shifting and changing. And you begin to recognize that there is a relationship between what you are thinking and what you'll feel on the inside. That every emotion you experience, every thought, is a psychobiological event. While it's happening in the mind, it is also happening, perhaps subtly, in the felt sense. It's happening in the body. And it can be tremendously helpful to begin to recognize that when the mind is very, very busy, if it's caught in obsessive thinking, that there is probably some emotional quality that is just underneath that. Perhaps some quality of anxiety or fear. And transcendent of that anxiety and fear is that if you really slow down and relax and pay attention, you can locate that on the inside. You can attend and you can befriend that energetic, vibrational experience on the inside. And perhaps cultivate a shift in your relationship to it. So the more you practice this shift from the cognitive to the experiential, you will begin to feel more. A good friend of mine many years ago, I was asking him about how he got into meditation, and he told me how many years earlier he was living in New York City in the finance industry and he hated his life. He went to a therapist, and his therapist said, "You should really learn how to meditate. You will feel better." He got very excited. He got trained in meditation. He went to his first retreat. The retreat was filled with anxiety, rage, and depression. He went back to his therapist after the retreat. He said, "What in the heck were you talking about? You told me I feel better, but all I could feel was rage, anxiety, and depression." His therapist smiled and said, "Yeah, you feel anger better, you feel rage better, you feel depression better." He You have access to it. When you can identify, what is this? When you can give it a name, you have begun the process of shifting your relationship to it. In the shamanic traditions, they say if you can name a fear, you take its power away. You may not take all its power away, but you begin to create a little bit of space between you and it. In other traditions, they say when you name it, you begin to tame it. So this is a powerful process of naming what is present, naming what is true, not your preference, not your embellishment, but what's actually here. Tremendously powerful tool. It leads to wisdom, to the recognition of what is true. And this leads to the second inquiry, to the second question. There are many variations, but one question is to ask, can I let this moment be right now? Can I let it be? Can I be with it? There's a classic teaching story of Ajahn Chah, one of the renowned meditation masters from Asia. And the story goes that as people would be meditating in the monastery that he was running, that he would just talk to people and he would say, "Tell me about your suffering." And people would tell him about what they were working with, their anger, their aversion, their judgment, their blame, their scattered mind, their wanting, their clinging, their fantasies, their anxiety, their worry, their sloth and torpor, their depression, their doubt, their fears. And he would listen to all of it. And then he would ask, "Can you bear it?" Another form, can you be with it? And it's a very powerful question. No matter what you have named in your experience, no matter what organically arises out of your internal experience to be seen and named and felt and befriended, to ask yourself, can I be with this? And it's always important to recognize that sometimes it's not okay. You can't be with it. And it's a very skillful thing to let it know you see it. Another time when the conditions are different, perhaps when you have more energy, when you have more concentration, more mindfulness, then that will be a more appropriate circumstance. But if it feels like it's too much, shift your attention. Take a walk, get a cup of tea. But you may find, in many cases, that when you ask that question, can I be with this? Can I bear this? That there may be some form of an affirmation, some form of a yes. And when you have that sense of the confirmation of the yes, something quite magical can begin to happen. By saying yes, if it feels safe, you have opened more space for it. You have given more room for that phenomena to arise and change and move. Variations on this inquiry: can I let it be? Can I be with it? Can I bear it? Can I give it room? Can I give this space? There's a story of a Zen monk who was in deep grief over his son who had recently died. And one of his young students said, "But Master, you have repeatedly said over and over again that anything born out of causes and conditions is destined to change and die. Surely you knew he would die." And the Zen master said, "Yes, I knew he would die, but this is perhaps the hardest thing to let go." Wisdom tells us that everything will die. Everything born out of causes and conditions. This body, everyone you hold dear, everything you cherish will one day vanish. We know that on some level. The capacity to allow, to make room, opens our capacity for compassion. Soknyi Rinpoche, the Tibetan teacher, said, compassion is the lubrication that allows you to be with it and to let it go. So perhaps we can do a brief inquiry just for a few minutes. If you like, you can again close your eyes. And you might just reflect on this first question of what is this moment? Or if you like, you might just take a few moments to reflect on something that you found challenging today, a difficult moment, a moment of resistance. And as you think on that, just to notice what felt sense forms on the inside, noting how your body holds this moment. Can you name what this feels like inside? Can you locate where you feel it in this felt sense? And you might reflect on the following questions. Can you let this be? Can you make room for this moment? And if it is possible to let this be, to give this room, what does letting it be feel like on the inside? You might notice if there is anything in this quality of allowing that might facilitate it's shifting or moving or changing in any way. Can you track this felt shift? If you were to offer a sense of kindness or compassion to this inner felt sense, how might it move or shift or change? And deepening the breath. And if you like, you can open the eyes, or please feel free to remain with them closed if you prefer. This capacity to be with what is here can create a profound paradigm shift. The allowing, as Father Thomas Keating, who kind of brought forth contemplative prayer, he described this transformational practice of meditation as the practice of consent. Of consenting to what is here, to saying yes to what is here. When you can do that, there is a widening, there's an opening. And so these two wings of recognizing and allowing, what is this moment? Can I let this moment be? Become a constant process of naming and allowing, of attending, befriending. And what this does, these two questions, as they open up a third inquiry. Can I be more intimate with this moment right now? So recently, I was exploring with someone who was really upset about the recent political showdown. And she was telling me how she was perpetually outraged, just kind of unable to let it go. She couldn't stop reading about it, even though she knew she shouldn't read about it. It just kept stimulating her. And she was just telling me how she was so caught in the same reactive patterns of just simply being angry, just constantly angry and upset. And she was looking for a way that she could shift her relationship to it, because it was so deeply unpleasant and unrelenting for her. And so we explored these questions, exploring what it was like inside in this felt sense and how she might be with it. So there's a beautiful thing about being intimate with your experience. And the Buddha had a bad back, apparently. And supposedly when you would ask him a question, and this may be a metaphor, who knows, but when you would ask him a question, he would turn his whole body to you. So it was almost like he was turning his whole attention to you when you would ask. And I think about being intimate, about being investigating your experience, it's as if you're turning all of you to what's arising and bringing all of your attention to the intimate details. So I was asking her about, you know, so what's it like when she thought about all of this? And she described at first this was anger. And she could pretty easily locate that. You know, it was a acidic stomach. It was a tightening around the heart. It was elevated blood pressure. Palms were sweaty. And then I asked her if she could be with it, if she could actually let it be. And she could, and she sort of stayed with it and began to change. And here the intention, when we really turn to investigate, to be intimate with our experience, there's something very powerful about suspending the need to figure it out. Suspending the need to push for the insight, but to really give it room. It's one of the beautiful things about being on retreat. You can really slow it down, not force it, but to be very, very present to how it's naturally arising. And what we began to find with this initial experience of anger, she began to identify new sensations in her body, and she was able to name some of the emotional qualities to it. Some of what she named was kind of a hard-heartedness under the anger, which is really a feeling of being betrayed by those in power. She stayed with that, sort of named that, let that be, gave it room. That began to shift. And under the sense of betrayal was a deep feeling of sadness. So you sort of named a feeling of hopelessness. And again, can you be with it? And as she would be with it, as she would give it room, as she would give it space, that began to shift and move and change. And under the sadness, you began to sense some shame, a kind of a feeling of guilt that she hadn't really done anything politically active, and she felt, maybe I'm part of the problem in that I haven't been anything active, you know, politically. So as she was with that and felt that and kind of gave that room, she began to feel some compassion for herself. She began to feel compassion for others, a sense of ease. And at one point, as she was riding these waves of sensations in the body and the emotions that she was naming, she said, I guess this happens in every generation, doesn't it? There's never not been political struggle. And something shifted in her experience. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. What I find, and what I find so beautiful personally and in sharing with others in this practice, is one form of meditation would be just kind of a strict concentration practice, where you have your anchor, you stay on the anchor. When the mind wanders, you bring it back, you bring it back. There's tremendous benefit to that practice. It's always, always helpful to develop that muscle of presence. It's calming to the nervous system, it's calming to the mind. It actually gives you a stability so that you can navigate the difficulties that may arise in your experience and in your life. But what we can do in this practice of Vipassana, when something is persistent, whether it be physical pain, whether it be emotional turmoil, whether it be kind of a strong, overpowering mental state, is we can shift our attention from the anchor to the phenomena itself. And when we engage into these questions of what is this in this moment right now? Can I be with it? Can I make room for it? Can I be more intimate with it? Very powerful things can begin to shift. Anytime you turn your attention to something that you recognize as between you and feeling free, inevitably there can be a certain anxiety. One form of anxiety can be a feeling of being overwhelmed by it, just being swept away by the strength of that experience. Another is kind of a fear that you'll just go numb and you won't feel anything. But I always like to remember something Joseph Goldstein said. He said that whenever you turn your attention to something that's profoundly unpleasant, again, physical, emotional, or mental, there are only three things, only three possible outcomes. It's either going to get better, it's going to get worse, or it's going to stay the same. There's something comforting about that. I don't know why. When we turn our attention to the details, to the intimate experience, there's something profoundly human about that. Inevitably, we come in contact with our vulnerability. We come in contact with the unmet need. We come in contact with something that feels really raw inside. Something becomes unmasked when we do that. And the alchemy of kindness and compassion is tremendously powerful. When we make this shift from thinking to experience, there are a few words from Hafiz I'd like to share with you. Once a man came to me and spoke for hours about his great visions of God he felt he was having. He asked me for confirmation, saying, "Are these wondrous dreams true?" I replied, "How many goats do you have?" He looked surprised and said, "I'm speaking to you about visions, and you ask me about goats." And I spoke again, saying, "Yes, brother, how many do you have?" "Well, Hafiz, I have 62. "And how many wives?" Again, he looked surprised, and he said, "4. "How many rose bushes in your garden? And how many children? Are your parents still alive? Do you feed the birds in the winter?" And to all he answered. Then I said, "You asked me if I thought your visions were true. I would say they were, if they make you become more human, more kind to every creature and plant that you know." Inevitably, I find when I have the courage, when I have the energy, when I have the presence to intimately turn my attention to anything that's between me and feeling free, there is something deeply human in that experience, deeply vulnerable, and something inevitably deeply transforming. So perhaps we can try this inquiry on. If you like, you can again close your eyes. And you might simply explore this in whatever is present in this moment, whether it be something subtle, strong, neutral, pleasant. Or if you like, you might draw your attention to something that was challenging today. When you either reflect on something challenging today, or as you begin to investigate your experience right now, just as it is, what is this moment? You might sense if you can find a word or two that describes what's happening right now. And when you have named it, you might inquire, "Can I be with this? Can I let this be? Can I give this moment, just as it is, more room, more space? Can I say yes?" And if you can say yes to your experience, how does it change? How does it shift? How does it move on the inside? There are a number of questions that can deepen a sense of internal intimacy. And you might reflect on these questions. Some may resonate for you, some may not. Is there a sense of how this moment, right now, would like you to be with it? Is there a sense of this moment right now, of what it needs to feel more whole? If you were to draw in some quality of empathy or kindness and compassion to this moment just as it is, how does it move or shift or change? Can you track that felt shift? And just sensing what may have shifted for you in the last minute or two, you might deepen your breath. If you like, you can open your eyes or remain with them closed. There are times on retreat and times in life when we're kind of going merrily along. And there are two metaphors that I find. One is we experience a wave of resistance, or we experience a storm that comes through. And I like this wave metaphor. And there's this sense of as you're going along, everything's in homeostasis. And then there's some kind of internal clench. There's some sense that something's wrong, either externally or there's something wrong with me. And in that clench, the resistance begins to build, and we feel it as a pressure, we feel it as a tightening. And inevitably, that wave begins to build. And usually what happens is, if we're not paying attention, is we'll jump off that wave. We'll find some way to get off the wave. Either we'll blow it off through anger, through aversion, through judgment, through blame. Maybe we'll get off that rising wave by going into fantasy or planning or thinking about something pleasant. Or maybe we'll get off that wave by jumping into a cycle of anxiety, of worry, that helps us to disassociate from what we're feeling on the inside. Or maybe we get off that wave by kind of pulling the plug and finding ourselves going into sloth and torpor, kind of losing energy. Or maybe we get hijacked or paralyzed by doubt. Or that ruthless inner critic comes in and just freezes us up. The recognition of the hindrances of aversion, of craving, of worry, sloth and torpor, of doubt, and criticism are a tremendous tool, because when we can recognize them and name them, it helps us to stay on that wave. As the wave builds, at some point there is some kind of a peak to that wave. On the other side of that wave, and we've all experienced it at different times, there may be a sense of relief, a sense of release, a sense that some wild storm just passed through. Sometimes there can be a cognitive insight, a recognition of something you were believing that just isn't true, or some way you're holding your experience that just doesn't make sense anymore. Oftentimes there's no cognitive insight. It's just a purely an energetic experience, a sense that the storm has passed through. Resistance is such a natural part of any transformational process. And as you name what is here, as you make space for it, as you be as you're intimate with it, it's tremendously powerful to recognize that resistance, when it comes up, is actually the practice. It's a doorway. I have found for myself that the degree of my resistance, if I can stay with it, is equal to or exceeded by the release or the insight on the other end. So as you bring a sense of deepening intimacy, of really investigating your experience of what's between you and feeling free, it's helpful to know that resistance is a natural part of the process. And again, by naming it, creating room for it, investigating the resistance itself, you begin to shift your relationship to it. So this brings us to the fourth inquiry, the N in RAIN. And Tara described it as non-identification, as a sense of natural awareness. When that storm has passed through, when the wave has gone through, there's just a sense of kind of natural ease. Something powerful moved through. And the question can be, inevitably, is, well, how do you do N? How do you do non-attachment? That one will drive you crazy. I think of the RAIN acronym as really more of an equation. That when you can recognize, when you can allow, when you can be intimate, when you can investigate your experience, sometimes the equation that equals N. Probably best to sort of describe it of what the experience is like. When I was in the Peace Corps, I was struggling to learn French. And I had a house in the capital city of Niamey, Niger. And it was kind of a big house, open house. I lived right near an area where a lot of people crossing the Sahara would come through. And I would sort of befriend them, and they'd invite them to stay at my house. I didn't really own anything except for this really cool cassette player shortwave radio, which I brought with me and I really, really liked. So a lot of people came and went, and one of the local guys stole my radio. And then this guy came back to my house and offered to sell it back to me. I went into a blind rage. I was so unbelievably overwhelmed with anger. And I started swearing at him in French. And at one point, in the midst of this rage, I thought to myself, this is the most fluent French you've ever spoken. Have you ever had that experience? Maybe not in speaking French, but where you've been so overwhelmed and identified with your anger. And at some point, you move from being angry to being with your anger. That is that shift. That is the shift in identification, where suddenly you're no longer intimately identified with the experience, but you have a capacity to be with it. I was once exploring with a man who was having a very difficult relationship with his father. Had a very, very deep belief that he wasn't good enough. It was constant criticism from his father. And Tara had mentioned earlier how we can actually bring investigation to our beliefs as well, kind of exploring on that level of thought form. And while there are hazards to exploring that, because it can lead to more and more thinking, it can be very powerful when you recognize that you are caught in a belief, when you realize, when you can ask yourself, what story am I believing right now? Can be very powerful to really ask yourself, is this belief true? And then to ask yourself, when I think it's true, when I believe that belief, when I think that thought, can you locate what it feels like inside? to bring it back, to explore, to translate that belief to how it lives on the inside. That is a very powerful way to investigate the realm of thought forms. So he identified this belief that he wasn't good enough, and he could feel how alive it was inside. And a powerful question, when you have really come in contact with how it lives, how your life force is connected to that belief, to ask yourself, who am I without that belief, can be a very powerful way of sensing who you are not identified with that belief. For him, as he found himself so caught in this belief that he wasn't good enough in relationship to his father, when he went through that process of feeling it and naming it and sensing who he was without it, he began to recognize that his father was actually getting older, that his father was sort of weakening cognitively, and he had a complete shift in his identification, in his relationship with his father, where he realized that now the roles were reversed and he was being the protector for his father. That only became possible through this deep inquiry, to recognize what was happening right there, to make room for it, to be intimate with the embodied experience of it, that led to that sense of non-identification and subsequently possibilities he hadn't thought were possible before. So as we reflect on this sense of who we truly are, of who am I without this, we begin to recognize that so much of our suffering comes from holding very tightly the sense of I and mine. One statement the Buddha said, it's so profound and so easy to forget. He said, nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. When I and mine either softens or falls away, something very mysterious begins to arise. So why don't we close with a short meditation, a short reflection. As you sense the movement of the breath, you might make contact with who you are as this energetic experience of life. The vibrations around you, the vibrations of sound, internally the vibrations of warmth, coolness, of tingling, of pulse. You might reflect on this view of your internal experience falling into the category of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Can you register this arising? And sensing here, the arising of thought forms, the organic, natural arising of thinking, comparing, of judging. The commentary. And you might reflect on how all of this is happening by itself. What is this moment right now? Can you let this moment be right now? Can you be more intimate with this moment right now? Who is holding this moment? What are you? We'll close with a poem that honors the body as this vessel of inquiry. Body is something you need in order to stay on this planet, and you only get one. And no matter which one you get, it will not be satisfactory. It will not be beautiful enough. It will not be fast enough. It will not keep on for days at a time, but will pull you down into a sleepy swamp and demand apples and coffee and chocolate cake. A body is the thing you have to carry from one day into the next. Always the same eyebrows over the same eyes and the same skin when you look in the mirror, and the same creaky knee when you get up from the floor, and the same wrist under the watch band. The changes you can make are small and costly. Better to leave it as it is. Body is a thing that you have to leave eventually. You know that, because you have seen others do it. Others who were once like you, living inside their pile of bones and flesh, smiling at you, loving you, leaning in the doorway, talking to you for hours, and then one day they are gone. No forwarding address. Namaste.